10-point plan to protect the country from a looming terror threat is complete. The group Business Executives for National Security is behind the plan. Former Air Force Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz is president of BENS, one of the movers behind that plan. Michael Chertoff is executive chairman and co-founder of the Chertoff Group, former secretary of the Homeland Security Department, and he served as vice chairman of the domestic security effort and is here now to review the 10 points of the plan. Mr. Secretary, thank you very much for joining me today. Before we take a look at some of the points on this plan, what was the impetus behind this? What did you and BENS want to accomplish when you had this plan on the street? Thanks for coming on, sir.
I'm happy to be on. I think we looked at some of the emerging trends in terrorism and particularly the fact that we've seen an increase in efforts by international terrorist groups to develop homegrown terrorists or to send people back from combat theaters to their home countries to carry out terrorist attacks. And what that underscored for us is that the domestic collection of intelligence and information about threats is every bit as important as collecting overseas intelligence.
I go to this list, which didn't all occur to me before I started to read this report. The 2009 Fort Hood shooting, 2013 Boston Marathon bombing, 2014 shooting in Ottawa, the attack in Paris that we just learned about, Charlie Hebdo, they pile up, and my sense is that it's possible we've become desensitized to them because we've seen them come closer and closer. And, of course, everybody thinks about 9/11 on an ongoing basis. Is there a risk of desensitization if we don't examine this issue every once in a while, Mr. Secretary?
I think that is a risk. And, of course, we've been particularly lucky in this country in that there have been a few plots in the last several years that wound up being unsuccessful, either because they were not competent in terms of detonating a bomb like the Times Square bomber, or because good work by the authorities intercepted a plot before it was carried out. But as we've seen in Europe in the last month, there's an increasing number of people who've gone to fight over in Syria and Iraq who've returned to their home countries. They're well-trained. And even on this continent, if you look at what happened in Canada with somebody driving a car to kill two soldiers or the shooting in the Parliament building, we're beginning to see an uptick in people who are radicalized and decide they want to carry out lone wolf terrorist attacks.
One more point before we dig into the meat of this. This report says these recommendations don't represent an endpoint for change, nor are they a finite solution to confronting the terrorist threats in the homeland. Why do you think it was important to establish these recommendations as the floor rather than the ceiling, sir?
Well, for the very same reason I think you pointed out earlier, which is there's a tendency to kind of get a little bit complacent or desensitized and not to recognize that the terrorists are constantly adapting and changing their plans. And the terrorist strategy we saw in 2001, which led to 9/11, is not the same strategy we see now. That's not to say that the terrorists don't want to carry out a major attack, but they're also prepared to carry out smaller scale attacks, like what we saw in Paris or what we saw in Mumbai in 2008. And they're even willing to try to inspire lone wolf attacks by putting information out over the internet that's designed to radicalize and train people to carry out their own low-level terrorist attacks. So we have to constantly adapt and kind of check ourselves to make sure we're not simply reacting to yesterday's threats.
There are 10 recommendations that you and your colleagues make through this BENS report, and we don't have time to talk about each of them individually, but I'd noticed some themes in a couple of them that I would like to discuss with you. Two of them focus around interaction with the federal government, state and local authorities, something that you established and continued, and the Obama administration, Secretary Napolitano, and now Secretary Johnson are continuing those efforts at your former agency. One of them is establishing integrated fusion centers in high-threat areas. Another is increasing mutual awareness of state and local law enforcement with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces. What do they have to offer the federal authorities, the federal level, DHS and FBI, and what do the federal authorities have to offer the local folks to make this an equitable or even or valuable exchange for everybody?
So I think the critical insight behind these recommendations is that when you're dealing with a kind of terrorist threat that's embodied in a lone wolf or a very small cell of people, it's most likely that the information and the warning is going to come at the local level, from the community, from what the cop on the beat sees, what individuals, ordinary citizens may see and report to their local policeman. So to capture that kind of warning, you really have to train people and integrate information they collect at the local level. At the same time, you know, we continue to see threats from overseas. We see people traveling back and forth internationally, having come from fighting in the Middle East. We see bomb makers still trying to carry out more sophisticated bombings by developing techniques in places like Yemen. And that's what the federal government is very good at collecting. So it's the combination of the international dimension, which the federal government brings to the table, and some of the local intelligence, which you get at the local police level. And the integration of that is what gives us the best opportunity to catch something before it actually results in a successful attack.
Michael Chertoff is executive chairman and co-founder of the Chertoff Group and vice chair of the domestic security effort that led to these recommendations from business executives for national security. You've used several times, Mr. Secretary, the term lone wolf, and it's extremely applicable in this situation. But I'm starting to hear a term known wolf on a number of occasions surrounding these cases where someone who perpetrates an attack was known to authorities on one level or another. Is that the kind of thing that you're getting at with this, the importance of this information exchange?
Well, that's certainly part of it. I mean, what emerges out of the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013 is that one of the Chernyavs was on the radar screen with the federal authorities. They didn't find a basis to take action. They did not share that with the local authorities, and that missed an opportunity, perhaps, to follow up at a local level that might have stopped something. And, you know, as we deal with a larger and larger pool of people who travel back and forth, there's going to be a strain on resources. The federal government, the FBI, is not going to be able to sit on everybody. And being able to enlist police at all levels to augment the manpower we bring to this fight is a very important part of the strategy going forward.
And that's another theme that I detected in these 10 recommendations. We have a link to them at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, Mr. Secretary. And that's the concept of the FBI and DHS as the leaders of this effort and maybe the drivers in maximizing effectiveness of operations, but this being continuing to be and becoming more of a collaborative effort where information is shared among peers rather than a hierarchical structure. Am I on the right track there?
You're absolutely dead right. And the reason is because as we get more widely distributed groups of people or individuals, the ability to integrate that information is critical. I remember even years ago, when I was still secretary, we had an instance where there was a traffic stop in Georgia, and because of the ability to fuse that information with information from Florida, where the people who were stopped actually lived, they were able to detect that there was a potential terrorist threat. So as we increase our network of law enforcement, we find the best antidote to the network of terrorism. It's really making it part of a network effort and not a singular effort.
I understand that there are sensitivities, of course, involved here, because part of the issue of explaining this to the average American citizen is saying we're going to be very careful to only look for the bad guys and only take action on information that leads us to bad guys, and we're not just randomly collecting information on everybody. Where's the right place for that kind of message to come from, both for the sake of effectiveness and accuracy, but also from the position of receptivity by the citizens that are receiving it?
Well, I think part of what the recommendations try to do is create a structure that allows consistency in terms of investigation, in terms of what we collect, how we collect, and how we explain it. And that's part of the idea of having the Director of National Intelligence have a deputy who would lay out the metrics, for example, for what kind of information do you want to look for? What do you want to capture? What intelligence collectors want is information about behavior that suggests a threat. They're not interested in people's ethnic identity or what their religious beliefs are. They are interested in whether they are doing things or saying things that suggest that they might want to carry out a terrorist attack. So by being very clear as to what the rules of the road are, what is significant and what is not significant, we get not only better consistency, but we eliminate some of the concerns about overreach, which I think people have given voice to.
What's the action that you would like to see come out of this? Who has to do something next in order to for you to see these recommendations to fruition as you'd like to see them, sir?
Well, the good news is that I don't think most of these require legislation, although we do make some recommendations for Congress to organize itself a little bit more in a unified fashion. But much of this can be done administratively. What's required is to get the major federal agencies together with the Director of National Intelligence and with state and local authorities and agree, for example, that they are going to have integrated fusion centers. To have the FBI and the other agencies co-locate their intelligence analysts, to develop through the Director of National Intelligence a set of metrics and standards for what a fusion center ought to be doing. So a lot of it can be done without a significant amount of cost and without the need for any major legislative overhaul or reorganization, but by just putting into practice some basic administrative changes.
And you anticipated my last question, Mr. Secretary, which is how do we pay for it? Where does the money come from? It sounds like that's not a concern, like you believe that that's doable also.
I think the good news is it actually could be more efficient from a financial standpoint. For example, co-locating and unifying fusion centers would not only bring together and integrate information more easily, but actually might reduce the number of centers that we actually have to maintain. It requires people to recognize that not everybody has to have their own center. Sometimes we're better off if we work together and we integrate the centers. We all get the benefit of it, but we can do it in one place at one time for less money and with better effect.